So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, and our first guest today is Catherine Hughes. She's an activist and a writer for truthout.org, and she's written these two very important articles I'd like you to look at. The first one here is from January 2012, Anatomy of a Quote, yes, air quotes, Terrorism Prosecution, Dr. Rafil Dafir, and the Help the Needy Muslim Charity Case. And then this one is Fairness and Justice, Post 9/11 Muslim Charity Prosecution. This is at, again, at Truthout from September the 20th of this year, 2014. And this will be a follow-up. I first talked with Catherine back in 2012 when this first article came out. Very interesting story. Welcome back to the show, Catherine. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Scott.
I'm very happy to have you on the show here. I'm very happy that you reminded me of this story. I spent the morning rereading the first article and going over the second. It's a very important story here. An individual has been locked up, it seems unfairly, so it might be the most important thing in the world right now. Tell us, first of all, broad strokes, the background. Who is Dr. Rafil Dafir?
He's an Iraqi-born oncologist who worked here in upstate New York. He's been in prison for about 12 years now, and the reason he's in prison is because he sent food and medicine to Iraq during the brutal sanctions against that country. I mean, for 13 years, he fundraised, really knocked himself out and had a website, kept asking the government, is it okay to send humanitarian aid, was given the go-ahead. And then on the morning of the 26th of February 2003, he was arrested and charged with breaking the sanctions. And he has never been home since then. I mean, initially, the indictment was 14 counts of things related to the sanctions and sending money to Iraq. But when Dafir wouldn't accept a plea bargain, when his case came to trial 19 months later, he faced an indictment of 60 counts, including 25 Medicare counts. And actually, when the government, the trial was 17 weeks long, and I don't remember how many weeks it was before we got to the Medicare part of the case. But when we got to that part of the case, it was so ludicrous. I just thought the government had shot themselves in the foot. They had like bar charts where Dr. Dafir's bar was huge and the other doctors were small, but the witness didn't know if they were other oncologists using expensive chemotherapy. So it was an education for me. I attended almost every day of the trial. In fact, I just passed my 10th anniversary of my first day at the trial. And because of the size of the injustice that I witnessed, it won't let me go. I mean, my blood still boils when I talk about this case, and that's 10 years later. And, you know, I wrote to you because we've had this fantastic new development in the case, mm-hmm. where the Muslim Legal Fund of America, which is a charity in Texas, has hired retired Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift, Mm-hmm. And he's the man who took the... When he was in the Navy, he was assigned the case, the Hamdan case, and that he was the driver of Bin Laden, and the government, he was being charged as a terrorist, and Charles Swift took that case to the Supreme Court and won, and that meant that Salim Hamdan was able to go home. And, you know, I think Swift brings a lot of things to this case. Even during the trial, I noticed that one of the big... I noticed straight away it wasn't just a fear, you know, that Muslim charity in the post-9/11 period was under siege. I mean, in December 2001, the three biggest Muslim charities were shuttered. That was Holy Land Foundation, Benevolence International Foundation, and Global Relief. And, you know, like, the Holy Land Foundation case didn't come to trial until 6 years after that. And, I mean, I hope that Swift will be able to bring justice to Dafir's case, and that Dr. Dafir, who's now in his mid-60s and has spent the last 12 years in prison under horrible conditions, will get home and to spend some time in his family. But my other hope for Charles Swift being on the case is that he'll help bring attention not only to Dafir's case, but to what's happened to other Muslim charities. I mean, the two Holy Land Foundation main people after a second trial were sentenced to 65 years each. The other thing about Charles Swift is a lot of these people, like Dr. Dafir and the Holy Land Foundation people, were put into a special communication management unit, which many people consider a Guantanamo North. And not a lot of people know about this. So I'm so grateful that the Muslim Legal Fund of America have taken on this case, and that they have such a brilliant lawyer. And if nothing else, I hope it will bring a spotlight to what's happening, because certainly for me in the last 10 years, it's been very difficult to get any coverage, basically because the government never tried him as a terrorist. He was charged as a white-collar criminal, but, you know, he was sent to the CMU. He's now in another prison, but he's not eligible for a camp because of the US designation. So, you know, he just had his last, the November 4th deadline for a 2255 habeas corpus petition. And Dafir has been without a lawyer for the last year, and he had to submit that petition by himself. And you can imagine that was no easy task. And I mean, particularly because on June 18th this year, he was put in the special housing unit for absolutely no reason, which really impeded his ability to prepare his motion. And, you know, it took, like, call-in days, letter writing, two senators, Gillibrand and Senator Warren, contacting the prison. And finally, after 73 days, they put him out, and we still don't know why he was there in the first place.
All right. Now, I'm sorry, Catherine. I got to stop you here. We got to take this break.
Okay.
But if you'll hold the line, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. Everybody's Catherine Hughes, writing for truthout.org on the case of Dr. Rafael Dafir, railroaded by the state as a publicity stunt before the Iraq War. We'll be right back in just a sec. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Catherine Hughes. She's written this thing at truthout.org. Fairness and Justice, Post 9/11 Muslim Charity Prosecution. And it's about this doctor. He's an oncologist, Dr. Rafil Dafir. And he was persecuted by the Department of Justice just right before the Iraq War in 2003. A huge investigation, headlines all over the place about how this guy was money laundering for terrorists and Saddam Hussein and Iraq and terrorism and Iraq and terrorism, just trying to confuse your mom in the run-up to that war there. Just another fake orange alert. And at the end of the day, they didn't even bring terrorism charges against him. They ended up just charging him with some white-collar stuff that apparently was all just trumped up and bogus. And the judge apparently was perfectly happy to let the jury be inundated with innuendo about the, reasons to believe that terrorism charges are pending as soon as you're done convicting him of this stuff, but without ever really saying so. And John Ashcroft and Governor Pataki made big press conferences, made a big, giant orange alert terrorism case out of this. And then what it turned out was, as she said, some bogus Medicare fraud case where there wasn't even any Medicare fraud. As she said in their chart, they're comparing this very expensive chemotherapy he's doing to the costs of different kinds of doctors doing entirely different kinds of medical care for different people. In other words, their evidence was just slapped together, scraping the bottom of the barrel, trying to come up with a way to put this guy in prison, which, of course, the jury was perfectly happy to go along with. It's just another one of these. And as you were saying, I think it's very important, as you mentioned there, Catherine, about how it's so important that we get coverage for this case. It's so beneficial, it's so positive for this case that we have such a prominent lawyer coming on now to try to get attention to it. And as you said, not just for Dr. Dafir, but to bring attention to all the other trumped-up terrorism cases since September 11th. I mean, you're focusing on the charities who've been wrongly prosecuted. There's an entire reckoning with the last decade's Department of Justice and their bogus war on terrorism here in the United States. They've gotten all of maybe three or four actual terrorists, including, you know, Al-Mari and Zacharias Moussaoui, you know, from the very beginning of this thing. Maybe one small handful of actual terrorists in this country, Zazi from Denver, that kind of thing, Faisal Shahzad, who attacked Times Square. Otherwise, we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trumped up bogus terrorism prosecutions. Almost 100 or so of them, more than 50 of them, certainly outright entrapment sting operations. But so many more are cases just like this, where it's just a giant trumped up PR stunt, Operation Showtime kind of a thing for the agencies doing the prosecuting and doing the arresting and PR for the war and all that kind of thing, while innocent men are rotting in cages and the government is getting away with it. So I'm sorry for having so much of my own say right there, but I want to try to, you know, snap people's attention too. This is really important. There's a doctor who, what was he guilty of? He was guilty of trying to provide food and medicine to the sanctioned, the blockaded, starving, dying people of Iraq under the Bush sanctions regime before the invasion of 2003. And as you said, Catherine, he had checked with the State Department all along and got permission, had been working with them. Of course, what is he, an idiot? He's working with the State Department, making sure that what he's doing is within the letter of the law. Because he's not trying to get in trouble. He's not trying to help Saddam Hussein. He's a doctor. He's trying to help women and children over there that Bill Clinton was killing. And then they stabbed him in the back after giving him a license to do so.
Actually, he didn't have a license he used
the Well, I meant that kind of figuratively, but...
of another charity, and that is not illegal. And after 9/11, I think a lot of Muslim charities were wanting to put their houses more in order. So he had applied for a license that, if granted, would have been retroactive, and it should have been dealt, you know, he should have got a response within 6 months, but the government had put a block on that. And actually, that was one of the really sad things at trial as well, because if the government had left it another few weeks before it arrested him, all that part of the case would have been sorted out, because Dr. Dafir had hired accountants and lawyers to get it sorted out. I just want to go back to the bar chart, because we don't know what the other doctors were. I mean, I can assume that they might have been primary care physicians or something, but that was what was so blatant about it, was that the person who was supposed to be explaining the bar chart had no idea, which effectively made it, the bar chart, meaningless. So, and there were times, you know, there were other times like that in the trial where Mrs. Dafir was Dr. Dafir's office manager, and Medicare rules are extremely complicated, and the whole 25 counts was on one rule, and it's called the Incident 2 rule, and that's treatment Incident 2, the doctor's treatment. And when Mrs. Dafir left the house at 6:30 in the morning, and just shortly after, the FBI came to the house and knocked on the door and then battered it down, found Mrs. Dafir in her nightgown on the other side and had 5 guns to her head, and then 85 agents in and out the house all day. So there she is on the stand describing this, and her guilty plea is to one count of lying to a government agent, because she had said, I think, that her husband was in the office on a day that he wasn't. And so, you know, and up on the board opposite, as the defence had put a piece out of Medicare that if people were overpaid, a refund would be requested. So you've got all this bizarre stuff going on. And it made the whole trial surreal. And that was true, even like I've been to all the appeals, and it's because he was never charged with anything except white collar crime. Michael Powell of the Washington Post called it shadow boxing, and I think that's the best description I've heard, because Dr. Dafir can only go on the court record, and the government successfully kept that out. But the great thing about this 2255 is that we can go outside the court record. And, you know, in the last few years, we've got freedom of information discs that we've only managed to get 6 of about 38. But it's clear what, and even though they're like 95% redacted, we've only got like 5% of the pages, and those are 90% redacted, it's still very clear, you know, what the government was actually after. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they're still looking. And it's like, how much has that cost? I mean, there were people on Dafir's case, you know, 24/7 doing overtime. Is this a good use of taxpayer money? And after, like, 13 years or 15,
yeah.
You know, if you can't find something in 15 years, yeah, don't you think that maybe there isn't anything to find?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to spending taxpayer money, it's no object from the point of view of government employees, no doubt about that. In the last minute here, I want to ask you real quick to go over some of the things you talk about the innuendo, about the terrorism case that was never brought here. Now, obviously, there was a bunch of nonsense all over TV and in the media being parroted, that kind of stuff. But as far as at the trial, you talk about the judge allowing the government to allude to a gun cleaning kit as though this must be part of some terrorist plot and allude to, oh, this man shares a religion with Osama bin Laden. Oh, we're already out of time. Well, we're already out of time. Dang, I was going to let you.
Tell people to check out the website and also to support the Muslim Legal Fund of America, who are, you know, doing a fantastic job, but not able to help everybody that should be helped. And we're very lucky that
it's Catherine Hughes, y'all. DaFearTrial.net. Thanks, Catherine.
Thanks, Scott.
Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, Al Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. Darren's Coffee. Order now at darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and save $2. darrenscoffee.com.